Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Alice Bryant and Anna Mateo. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Alice Bryant.
All the local people knew Furtado Island was full of cats. People left food for the cats and even brought tourists. Then the coronavirus crisis hit, and human support for the animals stopped. That is when fishermen witnessed something very sad: a group of cats eating dead cats. Furtado Island is widely known as Island of the Cats. It is just west of Rio de Janeiro and 20 minutes by motorboat from the city of Mangaratiba. It sits on one side of Brazil's Green Coast, an area known for its mountainous forests and hundreds of small islands. Over the years, fishermen threw unwanted pieces of fish and unneeded catch onto the island to feed the cats. Other people left containers filled with water and store-bought cat food. That has helped the hundreds of animals stay fed. Some of the cats on Furtado Island are new arrivals. They lack the skills of their wild-born relatives, which climb trees to raid birds' homes. When the pandemic forced people to stay home, tourism slowed and restaurants that serve seafood closed. Boat traffic around the island fell sharply, and with it, the cats' food and water supply. Locals did not realize the situation on the island until the fishermen reported back in April. The number of boats fell, the number of tourists, and we saw the condition of those animals on the island, said 58-year-old Jorge G. Moraes. He works with a local group that rescues animals from abuse. "So we went to work," he said. He and other volunteers asked local businesses for donations. In April, they started putting simple food and water dispensers on the island. The dispensers were made from plastic pipes. Now, volunteers make weekly trips to add food and water to the machines. Recently, G. Moraes and three others returned to the island where thick plant life spills down to meet a rocky coast. "Cats that are recently discarded, they're more sociable," said Joyce Pukalski, the organizer of the group. "You saw we can get close and touch them," she said. "But not the wild ones. They all are hidden. You see them at night because of their eyes," she said. The population of nearly 250 cats can be traced back to a man and woman who lived on the island around 20 years ago, Pukalski said. They left and did not take their two cats. So those animals did what most creatures, when left alone, would do. They had babies. As the cat population grew, people took notice. And some saw it as a place to leave unwanted cats from the city. Brazilian officials are exploring ways to prevent people from leaving animals on the island. It is already a crime, but signs noting that have had little effect. Carla de Lucas is responsible for animal protection in Rio State. She inspected the Island of the Cats in June, and she met with the Navy and environmental officials to explore punishments, a statement said. Last month, Brazil's Congress passed a law increasing the punishment for abuse of cats and dogs. Those arrested for the crime can serve up to 5 years in prison. There are no freshwater springs on the island, and limited drinking water causes kidney problems for the cats, Pukalski said. But the biggest problem is bites from poisonous snakes. Another animal, a kind of lizard, will also attack and hurt young cats. The volunteers bring cats to the mainland as needed for medical treatment. They try to find someone to adopt each animal. If that does not happen, they bring it back to the island so they can help others requiring medical attention. I'm Alice Bryant.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Women in the United States are dying of alcohol-related causes at a growing rate, the U.S. government says. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention released a report on that issue in October. It found that in the United States, more men than women die each year from alcohol-related causes. However, the rate of increase in deaths was higher for women. The study also found that more women are using alcohol to deal with restrictions meant to slow the spread of the new coronavirus. In many cases, women take care of the home and child care. And now child care often includes supervising online learning. These tasks are added to women's work responsibilities, inside or outside the home. This can lead to an increase in stress levels. Having children in the home was associated with more drinking, Lindsay Rodriguez recently told NBC News. Rodriguez is one of the writers of a study about the pandemic and alcohol use. The study was recently published in Addictive Behaviors. Rodriguez said that for women, the most problematic alcohol use happened around March and April of this year, when the lockdown went into effect. There was another study published recently in JAMA Network Open. It said that Americans increased their alcohol use by 14% from 2019 to 2020. Women in the U.S., however, increased their heavy drinking by 41%. Heavy drinking is having more than four drinks at one time. The U.S. National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism researches alcohol and health. It defines moderate drinking as up to one drink a day for a woman and up to two drinks a day for a man. One drink is defined as about 14 milliliters of pure alcohol. Alcohol is the easiest coping strategy, said Natalie Crawford. She is an assistant professor of behavioral, social, and Health Education at the Emory University Rollins School of Public Health. Crawford told NBC News recently that over a short time period, the system does a really good job of adapting to stress. But this is chronic, she noted. Chronic describes something that happens over a long period of time. Studies find that alcohol affects women differently than men. Research shows that women start to have alcohol-related problems sooner and at lower drinking levels than men. On its website, the U.S. National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism explains that women on average weigh less than men. This can affect how the body processes alcohol. Alcohol can also damage the brain, and it can affect a woman's brain differently than it affects a man's brain. The government agency's website also states that alcohol misuse produces brain damage more quickly in women than in men. In addition, research shows that alcohol can hurt normal brain development during the years before adulthood. And there may be differences in the impact of alcohol on the brains of teenage girls and boys who drink. Some studies have suggested that some alcohol drinking can be healthy. However, experts at the American Heart Association say no research has proved a cause and effect link between drinking alcohol and better heart health. They add that drinking too much alcohol increases the risk for many health problems. These can include high blood pressure, stroke, liver disease, depression, suicide, and alcoholism. Studies show that alcohol has also been found to increase a woman's risk of breast cancer, say experts at the U.S. National Institute for Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. Its website says that women who drink about one drink a day have a 5 to 9% greater chance of developing breast cancer than women who do not drink at all. That risk increases for every additional drink they have each day. However, many people do not know this. A 2017 survey by the American Society of Clinical Oncology showed that about 70% of Americans did not know that drinking alcohol increases cancer risk. Problems with alcohol are not limited to the United States. The World Health Organization reports on alcohol use around the world. The WHO's most recent report on alcohol and health from 2018 estimated that 237 million men and 46 million women around the world have alcohol use disorders. The WHO said North and South America and Europe have the highest number of women who have problems with alcohol. Alcohol use disorders are more common in high-income countries. The WHO report said that as societies become wealthier, there is a strong tendency for the level of alcohol use to increase. The report uses Vietnam as an example. Vietnam has a fast-growing economy. In the past 10 years, there also has been a 50% increase in alcohol production. Between 2002 and 2016, the percentage of female drinkers increased from 2% to 11%. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. James Buchanan of Pennsylvania won the presidential election of 1856. He defeated John Fremont, the candidate of the newly created Republican Party, which opposed slavery. Buchanan, a Democrat, had often supported the South in the dispute over slavery. Most of the new president's closest friends were Southerners. He wrote that the North was too aggressive toward the South and should stop interfering in the slave states. Buchanan said the South had good reason to leave the Union if abolitionists continued their attacks against slavery. Jack Moyles and Stan Busby tell more about James Buchanan, and they discuss his influence in the Supreme Court ruling in the case of a slave from Missouri named Dred Scott.
As the new president, Buchanan believed he could solve the slave question by keeping the abolitionists quiet. Success would mean the end of the anti-slavery Republican Party. In choosing his cabinet, Buchanan wanted men who shared the same ideas and interests. President Pierce had tried to unite the different groups in the party by giving each a representative in his cabinet. This had not worked. It had driven the different party groups farther apart. Buchanan had served in President Polk's cabinet. He remembered how well its members worked together. He said it was the unity of this cabinet that made Polk's administration so successful.
Buchanan gave the job of Secretary of State to Lewis Cass of Michigan. Cass was 75 years old. His mind had lost its sharpness. This did not worry Buchanan, because he had planned to be his own foreign minister. The job of Treasury Secretary went to Howell Cobb, a Southern moderate from Georgia. Southerners also were named as Secretary of War, Interior Secretary, and Postmaster General. Isaac Tousey of Connecticut was given the job of Navy Secretary. Tousey was a Northerner, but he supported many policies of the South. Another Northerner, Jeremiah Black of Pennsylvania, became Attorney General. In forming his cabinet, Buchanan did not ask for advice from Senator Douglas of Illinois. Douglas was the party's leader in the Senate and the most powerful Democrat in the Northwest. Douglas believed that the Northwest should have two representatives in the cabinet. He said Cass could be one of them. But Douglas wanted one of his own supporters to be the other. Buchanan refused what Douglas wanted, and he gave the administration's support to a political enemy of Douglas.
James Buchanan was sworn in as president on March 4, 1857. In his inaugural speech, the new president denounced the long dispute over slavery. He said he hoped it would end soon. Buchanan said the dispute could be settled easily by doing two things: by ending interference with slavery in states where it was legal, and by letting the people of a territory decide if they wanted slavery. Buchanan said he expected the Supreme Court to rule soon on the right of the people of a territory to decide this. He said he was sure that all good citizens, North and South, would accept the High Court's ruling.
At the time he said this, Buchanan already knew what the court's decision would be. He had even used his influence to help one member of the court to decide. The decision was made in the case of Dred Scott, a Negro slave. Scott was sold in Missouri to an army doctor who took him to Illinois and then went into the Wisconsin Territory. Scott lived in these two places for almost 4 years before he was returned to Missouri. Scott asked a court in Missouri to give him his freedom. He claimed that living in Illinois and Wisconsin, where slavery was illegal, had made him a free man.
The court agreed with Scott and gave him his freedom. But the decision was appealed, and the Supreme Court of Missouri ruled against him. Scott then took his case to a federal court. Finally, he asked the United States Supreme Court to decide if he was a slave or a free man. The Supreme Court took up the case in December 1856. The judges studied it carefully because it raised serious constitutional questions. Scott claimed he was free because he had lived in free territory. It was free because Congress, in the Missouri Compromise of 1820, made slavery illegal in that area. Scott's owner raised the question, did Congress have the constitutional power to close a territory to slavery? Was the Missouri Compromise legal?
At first, most of the 9 Supreme Court judges had planned to give a decision without answering this question. They did not want to involve the court in this bitter dispute. The majority decided that a Negro was not a citizen. Therefore, they said, Dred Scott had no right to ask the court to hear his case. In this way, the case could be settled without deciding on the power of Congress to act on slavery in the territories. But 2 of the 9 Supreme Court judges opposed this ruling. Both were from the North. They had said they would write a minority decision. They said their decision would include a statement that Congress did have power over slavery in the territories.
Since 2 members of the court had planned to offer views on this question, the other 7 decided the majority also should do so. Of the 7, 5 were from the South. They did not believe Congress had any power over territorial slavery. The remaining 2 judges, both from the North, did not want to make what they felt would be a political decision. 1 Southern member of the Supreme Court was James Catron, a good friend of James Buchanan. Buchanan had written to him asking when the court would act on the Dred Scott case.
Catron had answered that the court would rule soon. Then he asked for Buchanan's help in getting one of the northern members of the court to vote with the five from the South. He told the president that the country would more easily accept the court's ruling if one of the northern judges gave his support. Catron proposed that Buchanan write to Justice Robert Greer of Pennsylvania. So Buchanan wrote to Greer. He told him that a strong decision in the Dred Scott case might do much to bring peace to the country. Greer agreed. He said he would vote with the five Southerners. They would rule that the Constitution did not give Congress power over slavery in the territories. All this had happened in the few weeks before Buchanan became president.
The Supreme Court finally announced its decision just 2 days after Buchanan moved into the White House. Chief Justice Roger Taney read the decision in the small courtroom in the Capitol building. The room was crowded with congressmen, senators, government officials, and newspapermen. Chief Justice Taney began reading the decision at 11 o'clock. He read for more than 2.5 hours. He said the High Court rejected Scott's claim of freedom for 3 reasons. First, Scott was not a citizen. Taney said the Constitution gave the right of citizenship only to members of the white race. Because he was not a citizen, he had no right to ask the court to hear his case. Secondly, Taney said Scott was ruled by the laws of Missouri, the state in which he lived. Missouri laws did not give freedom to slaves who lived temporarily in free territory. Therefore, said Taney, Scott was still a slave.
Then the Chief Justice took up the question of the free territory in which Scott had lived. It had become free territory under the Missouri Compromise. This was the law that Congress passed in 1820. This law kept slavery out of the northern part of the territory, which the United States bought from France. Justice Taney said Congress did not have the constitutional power to pass such a law. He said when new territory was won, it belonged to all citizens. He said Congress had the right to govern such territory until it became a state. But, he said, Congress did not have power to close new territory to any American citizen. He said the citizen from Georgia had as much right to settle in this territory with his slaves as a citizen of Maine with his horse. Taney said there was no word in the Constitution that gave Congress greater power over slave property than over any other kind of property. The only such power Congress held was the power to guard and protect the rights of the property owner. To close territory to slaves, Taney said, violated the constitutional rights of slaveholding citizens. Therefore, the Missouri Compromise was unconstitutional. Congress did not have power to act on slavery in the territories.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.